Welcome back to Shattering Us.
Without further ado, I do want to give Kirk the opportunity to explain what it was that he did that you said was not something you were comfortable doing initially.
It's just something that's very difficult to do. I admire you and James and all those folks that can translate so easily, and you have all the computer skills to do it. And I do it with a handful of books and really have to, and I'm not very good at it.
Oh, that's funny. I just have to stop you there. First, admiration is terribly misplaced. And by the way, this idea of easily, when I'm translating, it is so slow, and I'm so meticulous, and I get so frustrated if the program, and I use a program because the program provides access to information more readily than all my books. And I have walls of books. But the books, the best of the books are accessible by electronic program, which links them together, that just takes you to the words in the page where related words are available much more swiftly than you can look them up in alphabetical order in a foreign language in a paper book. So the electronics simply take time out of it. But I want you to know that the time that it takes, and I've made a practice of it, I still look up every word.
Sure.
I mean, I have seen Kara, 10,000 times. I have seen light,
right?
10,000 times. I've seen Haya to exist, 20,000 times. And I've seen these things over and over and over again. I mean, I'm not going to look up Yahweh's name. I've spent a lot of time with Yahweh's name, but I still look it up. And the reason I still look it up is because, each time you do, sometimes you see something in a related word, and sometimes you'll follow a route, sometimes you'll look at, a different word with the same letters, and many words have a first level, second level, third level meaning. I'll still do that, just because I think it's good practice, keeps you from being lazy. And I'll still take the time after I've made the translation to look up the implication and try to apply the implication of the stems, the conjugations, of the moots.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you, I shared yesterday one passage.
Mm-hmm.
It took me an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
To prepare it, to try to get it right, particularly because it wasn't easy. And it's because the words like for stag and buck,
mm-hmm.
that's not the primary meaning of either of those words. And yet in the context of food, stag and buck seems like the right choice. That's what everybody chose. And then as I studied the words and I looked at the particularly the verbal root, the actionable root, stag and buck had weren't even remotely associated with the meaning of those words. One was to think, and another one was to recognize for his majesty and splendor. And so I just want you to know that while it is fun, while it is really enjoyable, it's slow. It's slow. So don't ever think that you might be slow and therefore you would look at someone like me and say, you've got all of this enormous amount of material. It must be easy and faster. No, it's not. It's not easier and faster. And do you think I would have rewritten a yada yada seven times?
Well,
if I got it all right the first time.
We keep buying paper.
Yeah, of course not. So, but that's the joy of it too.
Yeah.
It's the fun of it. You can go through it an eighth time and learn something new.
Well, I tried a slightly different approach.
Okay.
And let me run it through you, and then you can give some pointers if you do.
Okay.
Now, what I do is I take your basic translation of something.
Yes.
And then I'll write down each one of the phonetic sounding words for the Hebrew words.
Right.
And then I'll have to convert it back to modern Hebrew.
Right.
So I can get all the letters right. Now, I do skip over the Dead Sea Scroll script and the Paleo script. I go back to the ancient script. So if I take that and then I convert that to the ancient script,
right,
with all the great little symbols.
Right. So you apply the artist in you.
Yeah.
You want a visual reference.
I like that. And then I look up along the way. I look up all the standards. I do use a computer to look up the words, but I also use an ancient Hebrew dictionary and lexicon, and I look up their perspective because it's kind of from a frame of this is what these people thought at that time when it was written, da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
And I see if there's any little nuances there, and then I break down all the letters.
There's a fellow, which I don't know what the name of his site is, but there's a fellow that actually provides the ancient and Paleo-Hebrew scripts, and he's written several books on what he perceives to be the original meaning of the words, and he's often than he's wrong. I mean, he has some interesting insights. I don't typically recommend his site other than to get the fonts because there's a lot there that isn't accurate. But there's a lot there that has value. He's a good resource.
Most of these guys have to, if they don't Christianize it like Strong's,
right?
You know, they don't have an order. They can't sell the books, and they're in business. But once you have the perspective, I can even read a King James and get a lot out of it.
That's true. I can too. My go-to happens to be the New American Standard, and I can go to the New American Standard, and a month or so ago, I read all of the prophets from beginning to end. Every one of the prophets, I read them in the New American Standard, and you know I can look at each of the translated words in the New American Standard, and I know what the Hebrew word is that they rendered that way. And so I can get, you know, just like you can, I can get a lot out of the New American Standard because I understand who Yahweh is, I understand his terminology, and I can go from the errant English translations right to what Yahweh said. And occasionally I say, you know, I wonder if that really is this word. And if it is, that's profound, and I'll go and look it up. And, you know, almost every time you get to know Yahweh, it's pretty easy to predict what word he used.
Well, each one of the letters, you know, will have 4 to 6 little meanings as well.
Correct.
And so when you add those in, then I check that to see if there's anything there that I'm missing. So forth. But boy, I tell you, I spent about an hour just getting 3 words the other day. It was like,
But once you do, your insights into those words are far beyond anything you can glean just by using the lexicons and dictionaries.
Well, y'all will show up before I get through the second tablet of stone here.
But you look, Kirk, at Yosha, for example. Yosha is a name that I don't like very much. I mean, I want to be clear how, so I'm not saying that I don't like the name Yosha. It's just that I don't focus on it. I don't focus on Yosha, period, because Yosha is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. My focus is, as all of ours should be, on Yahweh, and Yosha simply means Yahweh saves. Yosha is the actual name for the individual misnamed Jesus. And he is essentially irrelevant in the overall scheme of things because he's simply Yahweh, a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, fulfilling his promises. And he is the living word of Yahweh, so he represents Yahweh's word, and he's a visual representation of Yahweh. The reason I bring him up, Yosha, is that by studying this from a graphical point of view, you came up with two things. One is the how the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth fit into Yosha's into the name Yosha, as well as. What Yosha adds to Yahweh that isn't in Yahweh, and what that reveals to us. Why don't you go ahead and share both of those, just to show how the graphic representation can be so tremendously enlightening.
Well, I just came from the frame was that when I saw it graphically, and you see an eye and a tooth, and then I started thinking about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and that in the normal context is you're paying a price, you know, a tit for tat. You know, you knocked out my tooth, I knocked out your tooth, now we're all square, or we're reconciling our little argument. And he was the reconciliator of between
right.
us. So I mean,
right. yeah,
so,
he took on our sin, so our sin
so
became his sin.
He,
yeah.
So he becomes the eye for the eye and the tooth for the tooth on our for our sin.
Right. The, yeah. You to know? To yeah. square the square of the deal. Yeah, yeah, and how you came up with that is that Yahusha is it's the first letters, the Yod, the He, and the Wah, are exactly the same and in the same order in the same place they are with Yahweh. Yod, He, Wah. So there are two letters, then you don't rather than having the second He to create Yahweh and Yahusha, you have two different letters, and they're the basis of Yasha, which means to save. And those two additional letters are the Shin, which is represented by a drawing of teeth, and the Ain, which is represented by an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do get, he's the one that's squared the deal, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. He is the explanation that he resolved our debt. You know, if you knock out somebody's tooth, and you know, and they knock out your tooth, you're all square.
Yeah.
That was the concept.
Yeah,
and Yahusha does that on our behalf, which is brilliant. And then
he went, yeah.
But it's beyond that. What is the symbolism of the teeth? You talk about each of those
teeth,
pictures.
Of course, you know, you got so many, but you have nourishment. He's our words. You know, Yahusha was God's word.
Right.
In the flesh. I mean, Yael Cohen says this. Everybody says this. If you had a brain, you know, it'd register with. It didn't, obviously, it didn't register with me for a long time. But the God is the Torah, His Word, and I'll tell you another thing that years, a while back, you know, when you were talking about this dimension and that dimension, there's probably seven, and you speculated that perhaps the seventh one is communication.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally. It has to be that way. The highest, whatever the highest form of dimension is, it would have to be communication. Because everything about him is words. Everything is happens because of words and the concepts in his brain that conveyed through his name, conveyed through his words.
Yep.
You know, and so it couldn't be anything else. You couldn't conclude anything else in my little brain.
Yeah, I know. What I speculate is we know what four dimensions are. We know, in fact, that dimensions of height, width, and depth, the three physical dimensions, and we know that time is a dimension. And being liberated in time is one of the great gifts that we get by being the children of the covenant. Yahweh is liberated in time, which is how prophecy comes to be. It's simply a reporting of future history. We'll return to those seven dimensions and the Shin in Yahweh's name. Welcome back to Shattering Miss Kirk. Before we return to the two letters in Yahweh's name, the eye and the tooth, and what they fully represent, you mentioned that you are in agreement that my speculation, and it's clearly speculation, that there are seven dimensions, and that the seventh is communication. I wanted to go through the dimensions just a bit. We know the three dimensions that are height, width, and depth. And we know that the difference, and this is really important, the difference between going from one dimension to two and from two to three is essentially infinite. And if you are, it's kind of like the difference between Mickey Mouse and Walt Disney. You know, Walt Disney is a three-dimensional construct, and Mickey Mouse is two-dimensional. Overwhelming the difference between being two and three dimensions. But there is a fourth dimension that we are absolutely cognizant of. We don't know how it intersects the other three dimensions, but it nonetheless is a fourth dimension. It's time. And we are stuck in the ordinary flow of time. We can only go forward, and we can only go forward at a certain pace in time. Light is not stuck in time. It's totally liberated in time. Yahweh's not stuck in the ordinary flow of time. And understanding that time is a dimension and how Yahweh has witnessed our future and has reported back in our past regarding our future to understand how prophecy works is profound in terms of insight. So it's really important to understand time as a dimension and how time flows and how the rate of time flows differently depending on your perspective. The E equals MC squared is then get you to an understanding of the next two dimensions. Actually, I think the next three. Scientists have come to realize that 96% of the universe is unknowable to us. It's unknown to us and most likely unknowable to us. 96%. And of that, about a third of it, versus two-thirds, so it's broken down to the next two dimensions. I call them dimensions. Scientists are calling them one dark energy, the other dark matter. They use the term dark to describe it because they can't see it. They can't observe it. They don't know what it is. But they know that dark matter has an attractive nature. And I call that relationships, the nature of a relationship to attract. And they know that dark energy is repulsive in nature. And that, you know, it keeps the universe, for example, from collapsing in on itself. And there's more of it than there is of dark matter. And it's repulsive in nature, and I call that choice. And I think volition is, relationship is the vastly more important to Yahweh than anything else. But for relationship to be viable, there must be choice. There must be the opportunity to reject and to separate from Yahweh. And so I call dark energy choice. I think it's a dimension of choice, of free will, of volition. And then when you realize that E equals MC squared, what that means is that matter and energy are exactly the same thing. They're equivalent. They're just not the same amount of the same thing. That's why that energy E is equal to M matter, but matter times the square of light, of the speed of light. So they're the same thing, just not the same amount of the same thing. It's kind of like having a gold ring or a mountain of gold. They are the same thing, it's just not the same amount of the same thing. That helps you understand the difference between Yahweh and Yosha. Same thing, just not the same amount of the same thing. And because they are the same thing, it occurred to me that the thing that makes that energy, when it communicates, becomes matter. That matter is energy through a communication medium. It's how energy communicates with and how those bonds are formed based upon communication that causes this the formation of matter and the ability of living things to function. And one of the examples of that is you can take light, for example, and you can have two slits in a wall, a dividing line, and what you find is that if you're monitoring what happens with the light when it goes through those slits, it responds differently than if you don't monitor it. Light knows when it's being observed. Energy knows when it's being observed. It communicates and it behaves in a certain manner. One of the most interesting tests in science. And so I think it is clear that Yahweh's favorite number is seven. We will become seven-dimensional. And that the seventh dimension is communication. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Kirk, who has gone the long route in defining the testimony that Yahweh uses in his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. I do it on the... it's probably 100 words that I do it in, particularly in an introduction to God, introtogod.org, for those who are following along. And also in the introtogod.org, I actually provide a Paleo-Hebrew chart where I explain the letters and show them and then also explain their meaning. So you applied these, and you go deeper than I do because you're an artist, and it's it's extraordinarily, extraordinarily, you're a very visual person. So you do more words than I do using this strategy. And my view is that every challenging word and every important word, we should do it. And I would love to go back and redo all of my translations where you add a layer of the Paleo-Hebrew letters. You know, that would only take another lifetime to do it. Maybe another 20 years, and I could just redo what I've already done. So you found in Yosha's name that you've still got the arm and reaching down and out to us with an open hand.
Yeah.
You still have the hey, which is the person standing up, paying attention, looking up to Yahweh, mm-hmm. but you have one, not two, and Yahusha.
Yep, because of the grammatical part where it's at the end of the word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you still have the first one, which is now he is the person, by the way. You know, in Yahweh's name you have two, so you've got Sarah and Abraham.
Abraham, mm-hmm.
As the mother and father of the covenant, because the covenant is exactly the covenant's children that Yahweh is reaching out and down to lift up, and they're the two people that are reaching up and looking up to Yahweh, standing up in his presence, engaging with him, feet, and legs upright, walking with him. So you have Abraham and Sarah with Yahusha. You have one of the people standing because you just have the man. He is the human manifestation of Yahweh, so he's standing. In that depiction, Sarah of the covenant, she really represents a tangible model for us to better understand the role of our spiritual mother, the set-apart spirit. And so the set-apart spirit is not in Yahusha's name. So there's only one of the two hays, or people standing looking up to God. It does have the wa. Mm-hmm. And the wa in Hebrew is the Hebrew word for and. It means let's combine things.
Mm-hmm.
It means this and that. And it means to increase, to add to. It was drawn as a tent peg, which increases the size of a home or a shelter and makes it more secure. And now if you really think about the wa in this particular place, you've got Yah, and then you've got and. I mean, wa in Hebrew is and.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most common word in all of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and tens of thousands of times that it appears. And so you've got Yah and salvation.
Now along that line...
Yes.
Let's go back just a second.
Okay.
And when you think the last letter, of course, was the I, the Ain.
Right.
And when you look up the Ain, of course, it means to observe, to see, and to know.
Right.
By the way, it's also a 70, which is interesting, I thought.
Yeah.
If you put it right next to the Shin, if you don't observe the words, Yahweh,
mm-hmm. right.
if you don't get to know Yahweh,
right.
Then you won't benefit from the nutrition of the words to begin with. I mean,
correct.
That may be a stretch. I mean, but I'm
no, I agree. He is Yahweh to be seen. He is the visual manifestation of Yahweh, which is why Yahusha ends with the eye. Okay, that's that you want to see. It. This is God providing a visual perspective as to what He is of what His word represents.
And I don't get clarity with that looking at modern Hebrew letters, even with the definitions right there. You know,
I don't either.
So, and this is what he wrote it in, and this is what he talked in, and why the heck not at least look at it and see if he can expand.
Yeah,
it
Yahweh said that he was going to. He explained both of those two letters. Once when the children of Israel were complaining and said, enough of this, this brilliant light on the top of the mountain, it's blinding, enough of this bold voice, it's overwhelming. You're so dominant in our lives. I mean, we feel like we can't even wiggle without you seeing everything. I mean, you and I are human, we're flawed, and if we thought that God was observing every little thing we did, it'd be kind of, it'd be uncomfortable. It would really be uncomfortable. And this present state, I mean, there's a state that we're going to reach where it won't be uncomfortable, because we're going to be made more like Him. But right now in this state, it would be uncomfortable. I'm looking out at on a mountain in the background, and if Yahweh was at the top of that mountain and everything that I did, he observed, I'd be really intimidated. I'd be uncomfortable. And that's what the children of Israel said. So this is too intimidating. And Yahweh said, I get it. I understand. I agree. That's why and he then explained that he was going to appear to them like Moshe, as one of them, in their midst, as an individual. And so he said that he was going to, this Ain, I'm going to become a visible manifestation of myself that you can observe as one of you, that gives you a proper perspective on me and a different perspective, me as an individual as opposed to me, you know, scary up there and big and powerful on top of the mountain. So he said he was going to do that in the Torah. But he also told us in the prophets that he was going to put his words in his mouth, that he, that this visual manifestation of Yahweh would literally have Yahweh's words in his mouth. And the shin is the depiction of a mouth and a depiction of the word. And so Yahweh explained both of those two things. He told us that that's, that he was going to represent his word in a manner that we could see. And he did exactly what he said he was going to do. And that's why that gives an understanding to those letters that you would never otherwise appreciate if you didn't go to the Paleo-Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. It's quite amazing. I mean,
it is. Yeah. I love it. Now, yesterday I shared a passage with you, Kirk, that was this a statement on all of Yahweh's instructions I want you to act upon, except one. And it was on food, and unclean food in particular. And there was something in that, there was a lot of things in that passage that I thought were interesting. But I want to share two that I want us to talk about. One is the idea that there was a statement from Yahusha that is considered to be in conflict with the Torah when he says, you know, when you go out, eat what's put before you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was considered to be in conflict with the Torah because the Torah says, you know, this is good to eat, this is not good to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But based upon the Dabarim 12:15 statement, all he was doing was quoting Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, I made a lot of wonderful things, and there's a period of time that you can eat what, you know, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so long as you're thoughtful about it, mm-hmm. you can eat whatever you want.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't contradicting the Torah. The Torah gave that exception. Now, Yahweh wasn't contradicting himself in the Torah. He's saying, you know, I provided that instruction. That instruction is sound. Those things are good for you to eat. Those things are not good for you to eat. All of that is valuable for your understanding. And he says, now, so long as you're thoughtful about it, you really contemplate all of this, you're nourished on who I am and what I'm offering,
yeah.
then, you know, you can eat whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the reasons I don't eat some of the things, or at least a lot of them, I'm like, Larry, I'm going to have a pepperoni pizza every once in a great while. But the reason I don't do it is only because I like to know how it's prepared, and I know that's dangerous. I've had friends who eat shellfish that actually got a piece of the shell in their system and almost died from it, you know, until they found that that's what they had ingested.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of good reasons not to eat bottom-feeding fish and that sort of thing as well. But So I,
yeah, catfish and without the scales and then you look at which is a bottom feeder, and then you look at the sea roach lobster, which is a sea roach. It is a it's a filter fish. All of the clams and mussels are filter fishes in the sense that they filter the debris, the dirt, the garbage, the out of the oceans. That's why they have a tendency to make people ill if they're not really careful. So
there's lots of good reasons. I don't do it because of some law or something. I'm concerned that he would because it doesn't change our relationship if you do.
No.
That's the main thing. I'm not offensive to him because.
But everything on that list, even today, is tricky. Yeah. Now, we have taken pork to the point where it's much safer than it used to be. The combination of we don't let the pigs that are processed for food wallow in the garbage and eat garbage, and so their diet is better. Their health is monitored, and we have certain ways of keeping them refrigerated and then of cooking them to a certain temperature that diminishes the risk Yeah. But still, of the meat of mammals, there is no meat that is more universally dangerous if you're not careful than pork. So Yahweh's testimony was absolutely right on. This is good for you. This is not good for you. It was just so interesting. The other point I wanted to make is that he was talking about that you could eat what you want, and he put that though in the perfect.
Mm-hmm.
There's a period of time that this is this will be okay to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's not forever, and it shouldn't be an ongoing thing. There's a period of time, and it just strikes me that these last 50 years amongst the 6,000 years since the exit from the garden, that's a very distinct period of time.
Well, is he talking about that period of time, or is he talking about the last 1,000 years?
It could be either, but I think that we're during the...
Pretty safe right now.
Huh? We're going to get instruction directly from the source, and what he is going to prescribe for those 1,000 years is going to be music to our ears. Now I'm just looking forward to whatever he has to say in that period of time. I just know that we have a passage now. Welcome back to Shatterness. We've been having a conversation with Kirk, but we've had Glenn that has just called in, so I'm interested to hear what Glenn has to say. How are you?
Well, Matt. Good morning, Kirk. Good morning. How are you? Eating bottom dwellers is bad news. This is like cannibals never eat lawyers. But
the old jokes talking about a catfish what the difference between a catfish and a lawyer and I said one is a
one's
bottom dwelling bulgy eyed animal that sucks, the life out of the bottom of a pond and thrives on scum. And what's the difference between that and a lawyer? And one's a fish, and the other's a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, I know the theme of the joke. I don't know the pace and the timing of the joke.
Yeah, I always just heard it as one's a bottom-dwelling scum sucker and the other's a
fish. Yeah. Why can a lawyer swim with sharks and not be eaten by them? And that's professional
courtesy.
It's funny. In fact, with lawyers, is that it is a job that has a tendency to to represent people who are guilty to try to exonerate them. And also, when you're using a lawyer and you're actually doing the right thing, the lawyer will tell you, and you need to accept. And this is really tough for people who try to do the right things for the right reasons. They will tell you that there is no justice in the justice system. We have a legal system. We do not have a justice system. If you're looking for fairness, you're not going to find it in the judicial system. You're not going to find it in American jurisprudence. And the lawyer, the hardest thing for many of us is for the lawyer to drill into our heads that don't look for fair, don't look for right, don't look for justice.
Right. And yet there, so many of their arguments hinge on words like reasonable
yes.
suspicion,
right.
A reasonable definition of right. this, a reasonable pee or whatever, But anyway, I'm going to take the risk of annoying you somewhat.
Okay, go ahead.
Today, and that is to say that today, you don't do this all the time. Once in a while you do it. Yeah, I rarely thought you'd done it to me, but it seems to me you were deagling Kirk a bit. You today.
Well, what was I doing to Kirk?
You were deagling him.
Well, what is that? I'm not sure I even understand what that word means.
It's named after Dr. Bill Deagle.
Oh, Deagle.
Okay. Brings people on and then let them finish the sentence.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's probably true. And I'm, the fact is that I love Kirk. I mean, I admire his character. I love his insights when he calls on the show. In fact, Scott will talk in my ear, and both of us his presence brings a smile to our faces. I mean, I love his insights.
I'm a bit more irritating.
Yeah, your calls are typically on news stories, and I'm not nearly as passionate about news stories as I am insights on Yahweh, and Kirk's comments are almost always on the covenant.
Exactly.
And so there's an affinity for talking to Kirk about things on the covenant that are going to cause me to emotionally bond with him. A lot of it's because of that. I mean, Kirk is one of the people that I am deeply enthralled with the notion of being able to go off and explore the universe with. We have slightly different proclivities and perspectives, but I've really come to enjoy getting to know Kirk. So if I did expand on what he said and got pretty verbose in doing so.
Him and IQ, I sometimes chuckle. You bring on the world's foremost expert on Islam, and do the 20 questions thing with him. I'm like, I want to hear two or three now. They're first sentences connected sequentially by him.
That's true.
I hear when you aren't really totally on the same page doctrinally.
But I have to tell you, this was, and Kirk's still with us, it was Kirk's fault when Kirk, I'm going to blame Kirk entirely, I'm doing this tongue in cheek here, but when Kirk transitioned from the explanation of Shin and the teeth and the word to seven dimensions, I just love the perspective that provides, and so Kirk, I mean you teed it up and I took a big swing. But I don't think Kirk's mad at me.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.